Locusts, protests, and COVID-19. These are just a few of the challenges Africa faced in 2020. Health experts were concerned at the beginning of the pandemic that the coronavirus would ravage the continent. But so far, other places like America and Europe are bearing the brunt. And for more on why this might be and some of the other major stories out of Africa this year, let's bring in Ader Peralta, NPR's East Africa correspondent based in Nairobi, Kenya. Hello, Ader, and Happy New Year.
Hey, Danya, Happy New Year to you.
Yes. So you said we should have known that 2020 was going to be bad because this time last year, locusts were about to descend on Kenya. You went to go see them. Let's listen.
You might be able to hear sounds they are making with their legs as they mate, which I know is pretty gross.
Ader, this was the biggest swarm seen in 70 years, and there's a lot of worry when it comes to how crops could be affected. What ended up happening?
They're still around, unfortunately, and they've eaten through hundreds of thousands of acres of land across East Africa. And, locusts, for people who are not familiar, and I really wasn't, they're just grasshoppers who are high on serotonin. And that means that they're mating like crazy and they're also eating like crazy. And these guys, they can land on a farm one day and by the next morning, all the crops are gone. So the swarms that are still around right now, they're not the same swarms that we saw at the beginning of the year, but the weather has just continued to be wet and it's given them fertile environment to keep breeding. In fact, a huge swarm just moved into Kenya this week, and locust forecasters at the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, they're still classifying the situation in Somalia, here in Kenya, and in Ethiopia as dangerous, and that is their most serious threat level. So the locusts will still be with us in the new year.
Wow, grasshoppers hype on serotonin. That is really interesting. Well, after these pests came the pandemic. Some epidemiologists were predicting the coronavirus could be catastrophic for the continent. But right now, the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is saying that one out of every 500 Africans has tested positive. I mean, here in the United States, it's one in 20 Americans. Now there's less testing happening there. So that may impact the numbers. But overall, what explains why Africa seems to be doing so much better than the U.S.?
Yeah, so this is a story that I just kept coming back to because the forecasts, as you mentioned, they were super bleak on the continent, and it has been bad. South Africa, you know, is in the middle of its second wave right now. They've had more than a million cases and almost 300,000 deaths. But compared to the West, we're not doing bad here. Here in Kenya, there have been fewer than 2,000 deaths, and the why of that is really complicated. Scientists, they're still trying to figure this out. And what we have now are theories. One of the big ones is that this is the youngest continent in the world. So the average age in many countries is in the teens. And as we know, young people deal with COVID-19 much better than older people. Another thing, though, is that governments here have, by and large, followed the science. They locked down early, they mandated masks almost immediately when this pandemic started. And let me just give you an example of what it's like to travel around the continent. Before I leave to pretty much any African country, I have to take a PCR COVID test. I have to be negative before getting on the plane. And before I get here to Kenya, for example, I have to fill out a contact tracing form online. And every day for 14 days, I get a text message asking me if I've developed any symptoms. Other countries like Nigeria, they're requiring a 14-day quarantine. And scientists, they don't really know what kind of effect these policies have had, but they believe that they have likely helped to flatten the curve here in many countries.
Wow, I know that we'll be following that for quite some time. This year will also be remembered for its protests. In China, there was Hong Kong. In the U.S., there was George Floyd. And in Nigeria, there was SARS, or the Special Anti-Robbery Squad. Eyewitnesses say Nigerian forces opened fire. Around a dozen protesters were killed. Remind us briefly what happened in October.
It was very similar to what we have seen happen in the U.S. A video of a brutal police shooting went viral, and it sent Nigerians to the streets. And at first, they were protesting against this special unit, SARS, which you mentioned, and how they treated civilians and how they extorted them for money. But suddenly the demands grew and the protests went nationwide. They started becoming about young people asking for a better life and a better government. They became the biggest anti-government protests in decades in Nigeria, and they culminated with this huge sit-in at an iconic bridge in Lagos. Thousands of mostly young people, they camped out there, they danced, they sang, but protesters for now have gone home. There was this kid that they used to call Flag Boy, who he became kind of the icon of this protest movement because he always carried this huge Nigerian flag. And a few weeks ago, he went out on the streets again. He's alone. He has nobody else with him. But I spoke to him recently, and he told me that as long as the flag is still flying, there is still hope for change in Nigeria.
Oh, wow. Meanwhile, Ethiopia is spiraling back into civil war, it looks like. And you actually went to Sudan to speak with some refugees about this violence.
Yeah, so getting into Ethiopia has been really hard. So I went just on the border where about 60,000 Ethiopians have fled into Sudan. And I spoke to Letekiro Sabadi, who, you know, told us this wrenching story about what had happened at home.
I saw forces killing. Some people are killing and beaten by knife.
And as you can hear that interpreter saying there, Ethiopian forces attacked her town with machetes and knives, killing hundreds. This is especially tragic given the fact that the Ethiopian prime minister was just awarded the Nobel Peace Prize last year. What explains this?
So it's complicated. I mean, look, this is a conflict. It's a power struggle. It's between Ethiopia's old government and its new one. And, you know, one of the things that I found at these camps is that everything, you know, that caused this war is there. The ethnic tensions are there. The politics are there. But what I found overwhelming was this feeling of loss. And everyone there had lost something, you know, whether it was a child or a mom or a dad or a brother or just a business that they had spent decades making. So these camps, they were just full of sadness. And one of the tragedies here is that not very long ago, Ethiopians were full of hope that things were going to be different from now on in this country. Mm. One of the big promises that Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed made when he came to power is that differences in Ethiopia would be settled by talking, by negotiating, not through violence, as, you know, has been the case for centuries in Ethiopia. And at those refugee camps, you know, all of that hope felt really far away. It felt distant.
Yeah. One ray of hope to end our conversation, Ader, in Kenya, where you're based. There's been a baby boom of elephants, 170 born this year. What's the reason?
So it's rains, good rains for many years before. But not only that, this is the first time in the recorded history of that park, of Amboseli National Park, where they've had two pairs of twins born in a year. I was lucky enough to catch them. And I don't know if you've ever seen baby elephants, but they're so cute.
Never in person. That had to be a treat.
They're amazing. They bumble. They're like big toddlers. But procreation is also really hard for elephants. They have a 22-month gestation period, and the females only go into estrus when the conditions are just right. So this is really a great moment for the park and for Kenya, and the twins, I'm happy to report, are doing really great.
Well, thank you for sharing that good news for us as we go into 2020. Ader Peralta is NPR's East Africa correspondent. As always, thank you for your work.
Thank you, Tanya.
And some other joy we want to share comes from South Africa, with music from Bangadziwe Mabanla.